Bonjour les cinéphiles, welcome to another episode of Presque Parisienne. I'm your co-host Dilara, joined by your other co-host Kelly.
Hello everyone, today we are recording at the Quartier Général. It's a brasserie on Boulevard Saint-Germain. It's actually really nice in here. It's kind of blue, there's lots of leather, and there's like a sort of comic book theme here, but it looks still really traditional. Yes, overall, very nice choice of spot, I think, today.
We know we said that we were going to release every other week, but here's a surprise bonus episode for you today. I'm back from my intense travels and can't wait to record again. Kelly saved the day by doing a solo recording last week.
So yeah, like last week was like super weird. I can't tell you how weird it was to just be sitting in my apartment talking to no one, Dilara. It was just like, where's Dilara? I don't know if I can carry this myself. But it was really fun. It was a topic that I really wanted to do anyway. And I kind of think like it worked out fine for like a last minute release for what we're doing. So,
yeah, and for the first time I actually got to listen to an episode as a listener when it was released, because like I just couldn't listen to it in advance.
Yeah.
Anyway, so here we are back at it again. So we've been hinting for quite a while now that we wanted to do an episode on the French cinema movement that changed the way of making films, Nouvelle Vague, aka the new way. So here we are.
So it's also quite relevant in terms of timing, this one. We just had the 49th César ceremony on the last weekend of February of 2024. And the 96th Oscar ceremony is happening today on the 12th of March. So that's the day that we're going to release this episode.
Yeah.
So you may have seen some of the films, like The Anatomy of a Fall or The Taste of Things, like going around on your news feeds, and maybe you're not a long time listener, but your curiosity on French cinema brought you here, so welcome aboard. Dilara and I, we're two foreigners living in Paris, and we're talking about the reality of living here. We tackle this reality in each episode, one topic at a time. And you might wonder what the New Wave movement has got to do with the reality of like contemporary Paris. So let's dive in and find out.
Yeah, so that's so true. I know the listeners are getting quite impatient, but should we briefly talk about what's going on this year? You just mentioned, Kelly, two films and two award ceremonies. Okay, French Cinema 101. You can think of the César Awards as Oscars Award of France. It's given out by Académie des Arts et Techniques du Cinéma since 1975. So this year, Anatomie d'une Chute, the movie that you just mentioned, won 5 awards in the César ceremony. It was absolutely groundbreaking. The Me Too movement didn't really come to France, unfortunately, or let's just say the scope was much smaller here in France. To give an example, 4 years ago, in 2020, Roman Polanski's J'accuse was nominated for 12 categories. 12. The man is found guilty of rape and cannot enter the US since decades now. We can discuss if his art should be separated from his crime, but maybe not nominate him for 12 categories. So this of course caused great criticism. There was also an open letter signed by more than 400 people from the industry criticizing the lack of diversity within the César committee, as well as visibility in terms of like decision making. The committee in 2020 resigned 2 weeks before the ceremony, but that didn't change the fact that Polanski got one of the most prestigious awards, the best director. So Adèle Haenel, she's another celebrity crush of mine. She stormed out of the ceremony in anger, followed by others, and now, actually, right now, there's another wave of Me Too happening in France, very recently. So there's a lot to cover here. Maybe we can do another episode dedicated entirely on the French Me Too. However, things are starting to change over time, and here we are today, where an amazing director, the director of Anatomie d'une Chute, who also happens to be a woman and not accused of sexual violence, and collecting all the awards in France.
So I personally, I haven't seen Anatomy of a Fall. Maybe I'll get to stream it sometime. I've never watched the Césars, but I know of the incident that you're referring to. When the actress stood up and was shouting "La honte, la honte,"
yes.
All that. It was quite a thing. I do know this year that an actress whose name I don't know, what was her name, the actress this year?
Judith Godrèche.
Ah, okay. And she had called out some sexual abuse and exploitation that she had lived when she was like a young actor, like during her acceptance speech.
Mm-hmm.
Look, yeah, it's like it's disgusting, and this exploitation and abuse has been happening since way back in the 30s in Hollywood for sure.
Yeah.
Judy Garland and Brooke Shields, to give like two examples. Back in 2018, like you've already mentioned, the Me Too movement, which had brought spotlight to the Oscars, mm-hmm. and they kind of ultimately went nowhere. But it was super fun to see Harvey Weinstein go to jail.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, like, but my question is, like, when does something happen, right? How many times do people have to get up in a fancy frock and get a golden statue and tell the world all about their trauma before something actually changes? I mean, it's gross.
So, regarding Anatomy d'une Chute, I unfortunately had to watch it on the plane because I've been travelling so much. But I absolutely loved it. Such a poetic way of, like, questioning the equality of partners in a relationship. And I found it so relatable, and I think that's why you should watch it, for like people like us who are not native Francophones, who are trying to survive the bureaucracy and administration in France. It was a really good representation of that.
Yeah, and survive is the right word.
Yeah.
So like, it's not that rare for a French film to be nominated for the Best Picture Awards. It's happened like 12 times, like including this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's more common that French films get nominated for Best International Feature Film. 41 times to be exact. I think it was confusing for the cinephiles that The Taste of Things was sent to Best International by the Culture Ministry instead of Anatomy of a Fall.
Mm-hmm.
Taste of Things didn't get shortlisted though. It's not an official nominee. And I read also that Justine Triet, the director of Anatomy of a Fall, she highly criticised that move, and she was saying that it was like mostly for commercial reasons, trying to advertise like France's patrimony, food being a big part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't watch that film, The Taste of Things, La Passion de Dodin Buffon. But given the history of France trying to lure in tourists in many ways, and some of these we talked about in the City of Love episode, it may be the case. I really, really want The Anatomy of a Fall to win the Oscar for the Best Picture, though. I mean, the lack of diversity in the choosing committee has been so problematic in its history, so I'm not sure if that's changed recently. Because back in the day, I used to watch all the nominated films and be obsessed with who gets the awards. I stopped doing that as I came to realize it really doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, it's the same. When I was younger, when I was a teenager, I was really into the Oscars and wanted to see all the movies that were nominated. Now, I really dislike the Oscars and everything that they stand for. I look at it as just being like these privileged people dressing up and being hypocrites, self-congratulatory, and I find it extremely false and really excessive. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I'm missing some joy in life that everyone seems to get from this ceremony that I just find it just gross. Also on top of that, I find the Oscars' obsession with like white saviour movies a bit gross as well. I'll put a link in the notes with a list of like what these white savior movies are. Some have won some Oscars and some haven't, but there are like a lot of them.
True.
Green Book being like a really recent example.
Yeah.
And like in Green Book itself, the guy that movie was based on, like his whole family have come out and said like this is a complete lie, this is all false, it didn't happen that way, and even they criticised the movie, and it was actually about like a person in their family. The Academy of like old white guys giving out like awards to movies like that is just, it's so obvious and it's so depressing. In fairness though, like diversity has improved since the Oscars. Do you remember the hashtag Oscars So White?
Yeah.
That campaign started like 8 years ago, and it's had like a huge impact on like the ceremony itself, mm-hmm. on who sits on the Academy. So there's another source to that in the notes as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I think that's also why I started gaining faith again in the Oscars. I mean, I'm a cinephile, and like this campaign you mentioned, Me Too and all, I like these ceremonies. I want the movies that I like to get awards.
Yeah.
This year I watched some of the Best Picture films without actually knowing they were nominated or shortlisted. And then like once I learned, I was like, okay, I'm gonna watch like all of them. I watch majority of them. I guess I'm like getting back to my habits. I absolutely loved Past Lives. I cried my eyes out on that one. It's such a such a good one. And I think the committee's obvious choice will be Poor Things. I really like that film too. Honestly, I don't know. I will be so disappointed though if Oppenheimer gets the best picture. Like, small dick energy, that film. Entire film. I can't be as good.
Small dick energy, but the bomb with the most energy.
Yeah, but like, he really had to do that.
Yeah.
In order to prove a small dick energy. That's why I'm calling it that. You can cut that out if you want, Kelly, but that film for me is all that.
Well, you know, I have to say that every single movie you've just mentioned there I haven't seen. So, like, okay. So this is the current context today. French cinema is making headlines with, like, the success that it's having. And we obviously can't cover, like, the entire history of French cinema in one episode. Like, that would just be blasphemy, like, you know. It's called the Seventh Art, and the French are very proud of their cinema.
Yeah.
So today, we are only going to be focusing on the New Wave.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think that we should most definitely mention a little history here too, as usual. So, the French are the founders of cinema. The tool, cinematographe, which gives its name to cinema, was invented by Léon Rulle in 1892. He didn't have the funds to proceed with like this invention, and many people think actually it's the Lumiere brothers, but they actually just adopted the idea and the name from him, since like they were the ones that had the funds. The Lumiere brothers were already photography equipment manufacturers, and they used this tool to project films. The first screening of a project film in history is probably their screening in 1895. Funnily enough, they didn't believe their invention had a future, or at least it wasn't for a large audience. As the interest they got from the public was like more like sort of like a circus entertainment, I guess people weren't really used to having this as technology, I guess. That's like a super brief history. There's some sources in the notes for you. But let's dive into our focus today. Dilara, what's this New Wave movement that you've been dying to talk about?
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay, so Nouvelle Vague, the New Wave, is one of the most, if not the most, well-known cinema movement of the 20th century. So it's the end of 50s in France, and we're talking about a bunch of young cinephiles or artists changing the way films are being made with a completely different approach, like a critical approach. You're gonna find this funny, Kelly.
Okay.
There are two groups within the movement, Rive Droite and Rive Gauche. So exactly like how we argue about which parts of the Paris, which banks of the Paris we should be living in.
Yeah.
I'll go into the characteristics of these films later on, but given that the main characteristic is the auteur, so the author approach, let me first explain about the directors and how they're divided, basically.
Okay.
So the directors from Rive Droite, the right bank, are cinephiles who started writing at this magazine that's called Cahiers du Cinéma. So they started by criticizing how the older generations made films. So let me put this into context. During this time, there was this anti-elderly movement going on. I'll post like some comics about like mocking the old generation in the show notes.
Okay.
In a way, if they were doing this today, they would be the ones mocking boomers.
All right, okay.
Okay.
For context.
Yeah. There were even like some sociological articles written about this generational difference for the new generation under the age of 30, and they called the end of 50s Société en Mouvement.
All right, okay. So these directors, or shall I say authors, they are post-war generation, right? So they were probably in their late teens or early 20s during the war.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if any of them participated as the soldiers.
Yes, exactly. They're the post-war generation. You're spot on with that. The one I know who went to war is Chris Marker, but he's from the left bank, so he's a bit older.
Okay.
So to go back to these right bankers, these super young film critics, they were quite judgmental of the state of French cinema. Truffaut, for example, in his famous article Une certaine tendance du cinéma français in 1954, called the French cinema the qualité française. But he used the word quality as an insult.
All right, that's, it's like so bizarre, because we've talked about the French haute couture fashion, like when we were in talking about our City of Love episode, and these two movements were happening more or less at the same time. And French fashion is all about quality, like actually advertising the French quality.
Yeah, that's so true, actually. I didn't think about that. I think he used the word quality as a representation of conformity.
Right.
Because he was criticizing the films that were made in studios with light, sound being added on later on, like being produced in a factory.
Right, okay.
Like it has to be presented in a certain way, in a certain packaging.
Right.
Him and his buddies such as like Godard, Chabrol, were all like, okay, all talk, no action doesn't get us anywhere. Instead of criticizing the dinosaurs, we'll make our own films.
Love it. Okay.
So these are the directors from Rive Droite. Now, the directors from Rive Gauche are actually artists, like photographers or authors or essayists. They didn't even like identify as cinephiles. Some of them didn't even like go to the cinema to watch films. That obviously changed. I mean, once they started making films, they had to go watch films, right?
Yeah.
The most known directors from this party are Agnès Varda, Chris Marker, and Jacques Demy, but there are more. So the films of Rive Droite, I'd say, are maybe a little bit over-intellectualized, sometimes too abstract, a bit dry of emotion even. Especially Godard's films are like that. I mean, this is obviously my opinion. Art is subjective. Whereas the Rive Gauche, although they identified more as intellectuals, I find their films a bit warmer in emotions and more political. They visit political subjects.
Right.
There are various discussions around if these two movements should have been separated and not called the New Wave altogether. To be honest, even if they respected each other's works, they didn't even want to be in the same movement together, actually.
Okay.
Nevertheless, they do meet on common grounds. Like, they all see that cinema is a form of art, not entertainment, like that circus thingy going on.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is also why I like this movement so much, because, like, yeah, it is art. Cinema is art, for me at least. And this is also why the cinema is called the Septième Art, like you said, the seventh art.
Yep.
They all take a documentary approach to film. They all visit existential topics, concentrating on the individual and the, I would say, like the absurdity of human existence.
Right, okay. I'm just going to mention our City of Love episode again, mm-hmm. because we made a reference then to the importance of French existentialism during that episode.
Yeah.
And like, this is all connected, right, in terms of timing.
Yes, because you know the rejection of paternalism and the ownership of ownership is the main theme in French existentialism.
Right.
So these are the directors who grew up in that ambiance,
right,
where French existentialism was celebrated as a victory of freedom from the Nazi despotism.
Ah, oh, right, okay, well, yeah, this is kind of getting more into my vibe now, like, a bit of World War history. Like, as you said, like, there's also the impact of World Wars on this movement. Like, given that the filmmaking equipment was founded in France, and France was a leading force in filmmaking in the world up until World War II, up until World War I.
Yeah.
But then, given the scarcity of the resources, like, the French government put a ban on filmmaking, and the leading studio of Georges Méliès was turned into a hospital, and they burnt the films to make boot heels for the soldiers.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yep.
Recycling.
Yeah. So then we had World War II, which destroyed France, like, in so many ways. And it takes so much time to recover from the impact of, like, a global war, obviously. What I understand is that while making these films, they do, like, live in a period while France is still struggling economically and when sources are still quite scarce.
Yes.
So, just want to talk a bit about the equipment part again. During the 50s, France developed and manufactured cameras for making documentaries, and these were, like, more mobile and cheaper. Like a selfie stick. And when I looked into this, I saw that many of the New Wave directors were using these documentary cameras. They were just placing them on their shoulders instead of these like heavy traditional static cameras, and this just gave them so much freedom.
Yes, the usage of documentary cameras is such an important detail, Kaylee, because also what you mentioned about the post-war climate, the resources are being scarce and all, they had limited resources and they made it work with those. These films are no big budget productions. The actors, the actresses were not superstars, although some of them became like super famous after the moment.
Yeah.
They invited friends, family, people they knew, or like random people to play in their films. They used microphones from the documentary cameras, which you just mentioned, so that they didn't have to add the sound later, which is like a cutting down on the resources again.
Yeah.
They didn't travel much either. Most of these films are filmed in the région parisienne. So these films are really raw and as close to reality as they can be. So they're really like documentaries in a way.
Wow, okay. So what's this author's approach you were talking about earlier then?
Oh yes, that, sorry. So before the New Wave, films were made by studios. Studios were the creators, they were the owners. And for some cases, it was the actress and the actresses who made films popular. Definitely not the directors. These directors said, we are the creators of film. It's our signature on our creative work of art. No one else's.
Okay.
So, for example, when you think of a Sofia Coppola film today, you're thinking of like coming of age theme, especially portraying young women getting over their heartache. You think of 80s music. You think of wide angle shots with like tiny humans in the shots.
Okay.
You think of less dialogue, more cinematography to tell a true story. Automatically, these trademarks come to your mind. For example, we were talking about the fact like I saw Poor Things. I didn't go to see that movie because it was nominated for the Oscars. I went to see it because I watched The Lobster and The Favourite from that director before. I loved his style and I wanted to see his next film. So this kind of a like approach to I like the films of this or that director wasn't the norm before the New Wave, except for Alfred Hitchcock maybe, because I would say, and most of them pay tribute to him in their films.
So I guess I understand this director is the creator approach, but isn't it a bit problematic because like, you know, films are supposed to be like a work of like a team of people.
Yeah, so fucking true. I 100% agree with you on this. I think we tend to forget the teamwork put into a film when we only concentrate on the director or even the actors or the actresses. I think the motivation of this author approach though, in the Nouvelle Vague at least, was more around like a rebellion and freedom from the dictations and regulations of studios.
Right, okay. So, like, are there any other like characteristics of like New Wave films that make them different, or like you know, non-conformist to what they claim to be?
Yeah, there's tons to count, honestly. But I say there are two more key features from these films that are still relevant today. One is jump cuts. So when you're watching a scene and it feels like it's been cut all of a sudden, and then the scene continues, but you know it doesn't left off there. So that's what a jump cut is. And another one is breaking the fourth wall.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So the fourth wall, for those who don't know, is the invisible wall between the performance and the audience. It's when the performer all of a sudden gets out of character and then like turns to the camera and speaks to the audience. So some uncultured swines, I'm sorry for calling you that, think Woody Allen invented this. That man didn't invent shit, okay? These directors from the New Wave, they didn't invent these techniques either.
Yeah.
But they use them regularly as a rebellion, intentionally, to make you aware that you're actually participating as a viewer in a piece of art.
Right, okay. Interesting. So we promised the listeners that we would link all of this to today's Paris. I think to begin with, like, it's not just today's Paris or French cinema. The New Wave really influenced the way of filmmaking in Hollywood, right? I mean, what you're saying is that they created the quote-unquote author approach to filmmaking. So today we say, I went to see a movie of this or that director, instead of mentioning the film's name sometimes.
Yeah.
They democratised the way of filmmaking by using limited resources and by making that the norm.
Yeah.
And they also use the techniques such as jump cuts, breaking the fourth wall, which also became like popular techniques in making films, and that's like super impressive. But what about Paris today? I think because they literally document how young Parisians live in Paris had a massive influence on the representation of this city.
Yeah, I said this many times, these films made me fall in love with Paris.
Yeah.
Okay, so things change. If you come to Paris today expecting to find the reality of these films, of course you'll be disappointed. I mean, these are black and white films of the late 50s and 60s. Yeah. So, but the chaotic way of living in Paris, the youngsters leading the cultural change, the existential crisis we're all in while facing the reality of neo-capitalism, I think those things are still the same. In a different period, but all the same.
Yeah, actually, like when you put it like that, yeah, for sure. So I also found an article that shows some scenes from the films and how they portray Paris and how those places look now. I felt like Paris is still very much conserved in terms of architecture and scenery.
Yeah. Okay, so Kelly, I told you that I wanted to end this episode by talking about some film recommendations. But you know what? I changed my mind.
Oh, really? Well, just end there then.
I want to talk about something else. Because, like, if you Google Nouvelle Vague films, you'll find the most known ones. So I won't bother, like, giving my top five list or whatever.
Okay.
But I like to use this, like, ending time to praise someone.
Okay.
So her name is Agnès Varda. Plus, like, if you're, as a listener, curious about getting introduced to New Wave films, she's a great starting point. Just go and watch her absolutely amazing works of art. So the reason I want to talk about her, first of all, she is the only woman director of this moment. And I, as a lover of this moment in my early 20s, I myself didn't even know about her. Because this was a period when men took the spotlight. So her works were not really visible. I learned about her when I got myself into feminist activism. If things were different back then, people would be talking about her like they talked about Alfred Hitchcock, I would say. And yeah, Alfred Hitchcock was a misogynist himself. I won't talk more about him. I will just leave like an article in the show notes for those who are interested in knowing what's wrong with him.
Yeah, let's not talk about Hitchcock that much.
Yeah. But given the time period, misogyny, sexism, mistreatment of women was quite the norm. So this obviously reflected in the film industry. Mm. While I'm praising all these like Nouvelle Vague films, when you actually watch them, you can totally see the male gaze like creeping its way through these films. Like for example, just watch Le Mépris of Godard, where Brigitte Bardot is lying naked in bed while like Michel Piccoli is staring at her and like she's literally asking him about what parts of her body he adores. Like that's like male gaze shown in like a scene for you. That's why I think Agnès Varda was revolutionary, not only for including more women in her films and like production teams, but also for the female gaze she brought to the film world. When you watch Chloé Saint-Cassette, you see men harassing women on the streets of Paris. When you watch, for example, Saint-Ouen-Illois, you see a homeless young woman, Mona, questioning her freedom as a woman in that day's society. It's so well done. Agnès Varda was also an outspoken feminist. She attended protests, she made a film about abortion, which is called L'une chante, l'autre pas. She signed the manifestation of 343 slots, where famous women declared to have had illegal abortion so that abortion would be made legal. And it is still very relevant today because thanks to these brave women's legacy, France has just recently become the first country in the fucking world in 2024 to have the abortion as a secured right in the constitution.
Yeah, absolutely. Vive la France.
I went to an Agnès Varda exhibition at Cinémathèque Française in end of December last year, and I saw the original copy of that manifestation in the magazine called Le Nouvel Observatoire. And my, like, I get emotional even talking about it now. I had tears in my eyes. And it was funny also because I saw a photo from 1995 protests, the one we mentioned in our strikes and protests series, the one even the homeless people attended.
Yes.
And in this photo, a protester is carrying out the sign Santua Nilua.
Yeah.
Such a good crossover for our show, so I'll post that in our show notes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. So, do we have a quote, Dilara?
Yes, and of course it's from Agnes Varda. So she said, the first feminist gesture is to say, okay, they're looking at me, but I'm looking at them. The act of deciding to look, of deciding that the world is not defined by how people see me, but how I see them. What do you think?
That sounds so empowering, and like, I think a lot of young women could really do with hearing advice like that from time to time, that, you know, the power lies in what you see, and, you know, it's not about how other people see you. That's how I'm taking that. That may be a bit kind of on the surface, but that's how I'm seeing that.
Definitely, I agree with you. And I think it's also a way of, like, looking at the female gaze, like how women want to be seen by the male gaze versus how they want to see things,
yeah,
in a way. So absolutely. It's very empowering, you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dilara. I feel like you've educated me slightly on, like, on, like, Nouvelle Vague. So
but you had your research on the wall.
Well, I had some research, but, like, you blew me away with that. So, yeah. Excellent. So that's our bonus episode for French cinema. I hope you found that interesting and entertaining. As usual, you can hit us up on Instagram. You can email us any feedback or comments. And don't forget to rate and review us on wherever you get your podcasts. And we will see you again. And I've lost thread of when we're going to see people again, because this is a bonus episode. Probably a week on Tuesday, I think, is probably when we'll speak to you again. But until then, everyone, thanks for listening and ciao.
Au revoir et vive la France, vive le cinéma français.